Good morning. It's a pleasure to see everybody here this morning. Special shout out to the Lower East Side contingent who are joining us this morning. I'm used to speaking Shabbos morning without a mic in a shul that's probably twice as big as this, at least physically. So hopefully it shouldn't be a problem in terms of my projecting. If you can't hear me, so please just raise a hand. And I'll try to speak. Oh, okay, not bad. I'll try to speak even a little bit louder. What's that? Okay, all right. If you want it to go lower, you can also, I guess, indicate that as well. The topic for today is a topic which many of us have an idea about intuitively. And what I want to try today is to take that intuitive notion and put a little bit more meat on it, so to speak. I entitled the shiur, The Exodus from Egypt, Central to Judaism. Everyone would agree, I don't think we'd find too much dissent on that point, that the historical event of the Exodus of Yetzias Mitzrayim plays a central role not only in our history, but in so many of the mitzvos which we carry out on a regular basis. This is certainly true when it comes to Pesach. So many of the observances of Pesach are oriented around remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, the eating of matzah, the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which constitutes the Haggadah on the night of Pesach. But there are many other mitzvos as well, which include a component for us to remember the Exodus from Egypt. To take a few examples, there is a mitzvah to remember the Exodus on a daily basis, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. That mitzvah is traditionally fulfilled through the recitation of the third paragraph of Kriyas Shema, in which we say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. If you don't want to take my word for it, you look in the Art Scroll Siddur, and there's a little note right next to that pasuk that tells you that at this point you're supposed to be thinking about remembering the Exodus from Egypt. Interestingly, since this after all is a women's shiur, it's worthwhile noting that there is a debate among the achronim, the later authorities, as to whether that mitzvah of remembering the Exodus from Egypt daily is incumbent upon women as well. It's a debate, so some say yes, some say no. But there is a statement from the Magen Avraham, one of the primary commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, who writes, interestingly, that although women need not say Shema every day, they should recite the bracha of Emes V'Yatziv, which follows Shema in the Sidurim, because that bracha talks about the Exodus from Egypt and is a fulfillment of a woman's obligation to mention the Exodus from Egypt on a daily basis. So again, there is a point of view that says that remembering the Exodus daily is incumbent upon women the same way it's incumbent upon men. Goes without saying, a mitzvah which is uniquely for men, the mitzvah of tefillin, as we'll speak about a little bit later, is explicitly described in the Torah as a way of recalling the Exodus from Egypt. Every time we make Kiddush, we add the words Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, to remember the Exodus from Egypt. And indeed, the Gemara tells us in Masecht HaPsachim that that is an integral part of the recitation of Kiddush on Shabbos and on all holidays, to recall the Exodus from Egypt as part of the recitation of Kiddush. So there are many, these are just a small sampling, there are many, many mitzvos which are tied in to the notion of remembering the Exodus. And the issue which I want to try to address this morning is, why is that? What is it specifically about the Exodus, about Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is so fundamental to Jewish belief and experience that it becomes a part of so many mitzvos and of the collective consciousness of the Jewish people? Of course, it's an apropos topic for discussion at this time of year when we're reading the parshios that speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is it about the Exodus specifically which is so important to recall and make a part of our consciousness? What I want to try to present today is two approaches to this question, two different ways we can see why it is that the Exodus is so central to our religious experience. I believe these two approaches complement one another. They're not contradictory approaches. But hopefully we can, by analyzing this question a little bit more, with a little bit more focus, hopefully we can take something away which will enhance our religious lives on a daily basis. Let me frame the discussion by posing the following question. So we mentioned a moment ago that Kiddush always includes a reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the Exodus from Egypt. That's certainly true on Shabbos, and we understand why Shabbos includes a reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim. After all, the Torah itself tells us, particularly in the Aseres HaDibros and Dvarim, that part of what Shabbos recalls is how we were slaves and went free. So the day of Shabbos, which is a day of rest, a day in which is the opposite of servitude, certainly highlights the theme of Yetzias Mitzrayim. When we think about making Kiddush on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, the concept that Kiddush, or the observance of these Yomim Tovim, is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim is also something we can readily understand. Pesach, clearly, the observance of Pesach, clearly reminds us of the Exodus. Shavuos, the giving of the Torah, we were taken out of Egypt with the point, with the goal of giving us the Torah and making us God's nation. Okay, so the Exodus from Egypt plays a role in the observance of Shavuos. Sukkos recalls God's protection when we left Egypt, the Anone Hakovo, the clouds of glory which surrounded us when God took us out of Egypt and watched over us for 40 years in the desert. But consider the following. When we make Kiddush on the night of Rosh Hashanah, so one of the lines in Kiddush on the night of Rosh Hashanah describes Rosh Hashanah as Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. And here, when you start thinking about that, you scratch your head for a moment, literally or metaphorically, and you say, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. I get it. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, that's Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. Shabbos, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. I'm with you. Rosh Hashanah is Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. I lost you. Rosh Hashanah is about as unconnected to Yetzias Mitzrayim as one could possibly imagine. So, you know, if you start thinking about it a little bit, you come up with tiras, so to speak, to try to explain it. Yosef, right? Okay. Yeah. Right, so he rested on the seventh day, but that still doesn't help me with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? In other words, Rosh Hashanah commemorates an event that precedes Yetzias Mitzrayim by many years. Rosh Hashanah is a holiday which is universal in scope. We say on Rosh Hashanah that the entire world is judged on Rosh Hashanah, not just the Jewish people, right? It's a holiday which addresses everybody's religious standing. It's not particularistic the way Yetzias Mitzrayim relates to the national experience of Klal Yisrael. So why on earth is Rosh Hashanah Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? So you can have Torahs. If you start thinking about it, you know, we know Chazal tell us that Yosef was freed from prison on Rosh Hashanah. So, you know, there's a theme of being freed from prison. Maybe that kind of works together with the Jews being freed from Mitzrayim. But, you know, you have to use your thumb an awful lot in order to make these Torahs start sounding like they're a little palatable. It's not an intuitive answer to connect Rosh Hashanah and Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. What exactly would that connection be? So what I'd like to try to use that question to frame the discussion we're about to have and try to appreciate how Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim goes beyond a historical event and a historical connection and really permeates almost every aspect of our religious life as Jews. There's a very fundamental Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo. You know, I was trying to figure out how to put together Mar Makomos for the Shir, which, obviously, you probably realize by now, I don't have Mar Makomos for the Shir. Again, a lot of the things we're going to talk about are a line here, a thought here, and try to connect it together. If there was one Mar Makom, one source that I would have given out for the Shir, it would have been this Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo. So this way, we can assign it as homework. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, see how well you went through it, and then we can talk about it at that point. This is, of all the sources in the Shir, to look up, if you're able to, this Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo is a very, very fundamental Ramban. The Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo starts off by saying, Ata omer lecha klal b'ta'am mitzvos rabos. I will now reveal to you the reason behind many mitzvos. And the Ramban goes on to address essentially the point that we're raising today. Why is it that recalling Yetzias Mitzrayim plays such an essential role in all of the mitzvos? The first thing that the Ramban goes on to say is that Yetzias Mitzrayim proves for us the notion that God not only exists, but is intimately involved in the goings on in this world. In other words, that there's hashgacha, there's divine providence in this world. We know that throughout human history, there were various different groups who believed in God, but did not believe that God was involved in the affairs of humanity. Again, if you know a little bit about American history, most of the founding fathers of the United States ascribed to that kind of viewpoint, which in the 1700s was referred to as deism. Basically, there is a God, they believed there is a God, right? In God we trust, we have it on the coinage. There is a God, but God, so to speak, wound up the world like a watchmaker winds up a clock, and then Rachmanu Litzlan, God walked away from the world and allowed the clock to run on its own. If you would have asked Ben Franklin what he thought about the nature of God and his involvement in the world, so Ben Franklin would have said, Avada, I believe in a God. Snoma spoke Yiddish. You know, Ben Franklin certainly would have said, I certainly believe in a God, but I don't believe in a God who's involved intimately in the affairs of humanity. He started the world and he kind of let it run on his own. Says the Ramban, Judaism is antithetical to that belief of deism. We believe not only in the existence of God, we believe that God is constantly involved in the affairs of humanity, and the biggest proof of this is Yetzias Mitzrayim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu got involved in a very direct and personal way in what was going on in Egypt, changed the order of nature on behalf of the Jewish people, and showed beyond any shadow of a doubt that not only is there a God, but God is intimately involved in the affairs of the world. Now the truth is, if we were to just stop there, I think there's, well, on the surface, what seems to be a difficulty in this Ramban, namely, that perspective is not going to convince a skeptic, it's not going to convince a Ben Franklin, let's say, that he's wrong in terms of his deism for a very simple reason. Ben Franklin will say, all of you people believe that there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim, but how am I to know that these events actually took place? So I think the way to understand the Ramban is as follows. The Ramban is speaking to people who are already ma'aminim, who already believe in the not only in the existence of God, but that God is involved in the affairs of humanity. But even people who believe need constant reminders of this basic truth. There are a lot of things we believe in theory, but on a daily basis we don't always have in the forefront of our minds. The constant emphasis on Yetzias Mitzrayim in our religious life is constantly reminding us not only is there a God, but there's Hashkacha. God has providence and is involved in an intimate fashion in the affairs of the world. But then the Ramban takes it a step further. Says the Ramban, when you realize that God is involved in the world because of the supernatural events that he orchestrates, that leads you to appreciate God's role in the world, even in the seemingly natural events that go on around us all the time. We just read from the Ramban himself. Umin hanisim, this is the very, very end of the Ramban Parshas Bo. Umin hanisim hagedolim hamefursamim, from the great and explicit miracles, Adam mode benisim hanistorim, a person comes to acknowledge and recognize the hidden miracles which are around us all the time. Sheheim yisod haTorah kula. These hidden miracles are the foundation of the entire Torah. Sheein la'adam chelek b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, because a person cannot truly be described as having a portion in Moshe's Torah. Ad shena'amin b'chol devareinu u'mikreinu shekulam nisim. We have to believe that everything that happens to us in life is a miracle. Ein bohem teva u'minhogo shel olam. There is no such thing as, oh, that's just nature and the way things are. Everything in the world is managed by God. Everything in the world, after all is said and done, is a miracle. Bein b'rabim, bein b'yachid, whether it impacts on the community, or whether it impacts on the individual. In other words, the constant reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim in our religious life reminds us as Ma'aminim that there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim and God manifest himself in a supernatural fashion. There was a time when God intervened in the world and made it clear to everyone that there was a God and that he was involved. When we remember that, that helps us remember that an hour ago as well, God was directly involved in my life in a very personal way, and that God is constantly involved in the lives of everyone around us. Yetzias Mitzrayim becomes a key to appreciating my personal religious life and my personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me just share a story that literally I heard Friday, and I think it's just an incredible example of this idea, just to bring it, you know, down to earth in a very, very practical kind of way. I went on Friday to be Menachem Avil Rabbi Pesach Kron, who, as many of you know, lost a brother in Lakewood just about a week ago. Rabbi Kron is a tremendous storyteller, as his books witness, and he shared a story at the Shiva, which just brings this Ramban to light in a very, 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 very palpable kind of way. So he was talking about his brother, the late Rabbi Kalman Kron, who had just passed away. He said he was really a tzaddik of an individual who was always looking to do mitzvahs. So he's sitting one day in his home in Lakewood, New Jersey. He's having a chavrusa in Masechta Yevamos, and he's learning the sugyos, the portions of Masechta Yevamos that talk about gerim, that talk about converts to Judaism. And Rabbi Kron, the brother, happens to remark, you know, we know that there's a mitzvah in the Torah of ahavas hager, of loving a convert who comes to Judaism. It's a mitzvah that's kind of hard to do here in Lakewood. You know, there are a lot of wonderful things about Lakewood, New Jersey, but, you know, it's not a community that's like a big gayrus community. You know, some communities you go to and, you know, there are a lot of people converted there. I don't know too many gerim around Lakewood. Where do you find a ger in Lakewood? And it bothered him. He wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Ahavas Ager, and, you know, he just didn't have the opportunity to do so. 20 minutes later, there's a knock at the door. And a fellow comes in. He says, "Is Rabbi Krohn here?" "Yes, as a matter of fact." "So you don't know me, but people say that you're a good person to talk to because I have a lot of issues that I need to unburden myself about, and they say that you're a very sympathetic listener." So Rabbi Krohn says, "I'd love to talk to you. I happen to be in the middle of a chavrusa right now, but you're welcome to join us for the learning, and then after we finish the learning, we can talk a little bit." "Okay, wonderful. What are we learning?" "We're learning the sugyas about Gerim in Masechta Yevamos." So the guy says, "Oh, that's so funny, because I'm a ger." "You're a ger?" "Yeah," and he tells him a story. He grew up as part of the Russian community. His father was unquestionably Jewish. And just a short time before his mother had passed away, on her deathbed, she revealed to her son that, "In reality, I'm not Jewish. We lived a secular Jewish lifestyle. But in point of fact, only your father is really Jewish. I really kind of went along for the ride when we got married." This fellow, who in the interim had become what he thought was a Baal Tshuva, became a Shomer Shabbos many, many years before, all of a sudden realized that, "Hey, I'm not Jewish." He ran to the Beis Din in Lakewood. Of course, they converted him in a very, very expedited fashion. He had been frum for many, many years at that point. Clearly, his whole personality was that of a frum individual. But he was still despondent because, after all, I mean, he felt like the rug was pulled out from underneath his feet. Here, his whole life, he thought he was Jewish, and all of a sudden, on her deathbed, his mother tells him, you know, he couldn't really wrap his head around it. And people told him, "Go to Rabbi Kalman Krohn. You know, he's a sympathetic person. He'll talk with you. He'll listen to you. He'll make you feel better. And you'll be able to have a sense of self after this encounter." So, as Rabbi Pesach Krohn told the story about his brother said, "This is unbelievable. 20 minutes ago, I was talking about how wouldn't it be wonderful if somehow I could find a ger in Lakewood to be able to practice this mitzvah of Ahavas Ager, and here the guy knocks on the door literally 20 minutes later as we're still in the middle of learning these sugyas. So the truth is, all of us have stories like that. We just have to open up our eyes to be able to see those stories. They tell a different story about a guy who's in Manhattan looking for a parking space. So you know the joke. He's going around, "HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please send me the parking space. I'll do anything. I'll learn more. I'll say, never mind, I just found one." Right? So most of us, unfortunately, tend to lean a little bit more in that direction, you know, then recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, even when it's smack up against us in the face. We all have stories, like that Rabbi Krohn story. It's a question of developing the sensitivity to be able to appreciate those stories when inevitably they come our way. That, I think, according to the Ramban, is the lesson of being Zocher, remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, as part of our everyday religious life. When we train ourselves to think, God intervenes in the world. And as the Ramban says, we train ourselves to think, God intervenes in the world constantly, not just in a supernatural fashion, but even in a natural fashion. And he does so for everybody, including me. That changes the whole way I look at the world. In different contexts, I've suggested that's really the message of Chag Gadyah, which we say at the end of the Seder. You know, the whole poem of Chag Gadyah seems terribly out of place at the end of the Seder. We just had the most sublime evening of the entire Jewish year, and then we end up with this poem, this rhyme that talks about a goat and a cat and a dog and a stick And it's like, okay, it's cute. Okay, when we were four, we kind of appreciated it. I know one family where that's like the highlight of their Seder. I guess they're up really late. They spend like 45 minutes. You know, this one gets dressed up as the cat. This one gets dressed up as the dog. And they have a whole, you know, they have a whole play going on, you know, over the course of 45 minutes. Again, they must finish their Seder at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know by you, by us, you know, by the time we finish the Seder, not everybody is still there at the table. And, you know, Chad Gadi is like, okay, let's get through this and, you know, do the dishes afterwards. But you have to wonder, what's Chad Gadi doing at the end of the Seder? And I think that perhaps the idea behind it is exactly this idea. Chad Gadi is all about normalcy. It's about regular, mundane, everyday life, and nothing in Chag Gadya seems to be extraordinary or spectacular. It's a dog-eat-dog world in the most literal sense of the term. It's cats and dogs and butchers and water and regular kind of things until you get to the very end. V'yasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the world. That's the message of Chag Gadya. When you strip away all of the externals from the world, the cats, the dogs, the water, and the butchers, and all of that, Hashem is there after you strip away all of those externals. That's really the message of the Ramban as well. And what an incredible way to end off the Seder of all nights, which is the primary night of recalling the Yetzias Mitzrayim. The message at the very end of the Seder is Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just a one-time spectacular event, but if we train ourselves, we can see God in the cats and the dogs and the sticks of everyday life. That's what Chag Gadya ultimately is all about. Let's go back to the question which we posed at the beginning and see how our explanation, I think, can help us understand it a little bit better. We asked the question, why is it that Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah references Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? What exactly does Litzias Mitzrayim have to do with Rosh Hashanah? So what we've developed over here, I think, can bring us to the answer that Yetzias Mitzrayim has everything to do with Rosh Hashanah. What's Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is about recognizing that God watches over our every action and holds us accountable for our every action. That is the message of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That notion of hashkacha, of God's providence, God's involvement, God's knowledge of everything, God's intervention in the affairs of humanity, all of those ideas which are contained within Yetzias Mitzrayim, and all of those ideas which are meant to be instilled in us on a daily, on a constant basis, through the mitzvos which are Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, so all of those concepts are essential to us appreciating what Rosh Hashanah is all about. There may be no historical connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yetzias Mitzrayim, but conceptually, ideologically, there's a tremendous connection between those concepts, which is why Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim plays a role in the Kiddush of Rosh Hashanah. I mentioned at the outset that I wanted to outline two different approaches to why recalling Yetzias Mitzrayim is so essential to our religious lives on a daily basis. Up until this point in the Shia, we've outlined one, namely the notion that recalling Yetzias Mitzrayim helps us appreciate in our daily lives that God is intimately involved in every aspect of our daily lives, and we have to be conscious of that. Let me present a second, and again, as I mentioned at the outset, I believe complementary idea, which takes the idea of mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim on a daily basis in a different direction. I mentioned at the outset that Tefillin and Yetzias Mitzrayim are very much linked to one another. The mitzvah of Tefillin is mentioned four times in Chumash. Twice at the end of Parshas Bo, once Parshas Vaeschanan in conjunction with the first Parsha of Kriyas Shema, and once in Parshas Ekev in conjunction with the second Parsha of Kriyas Shema. Because the mitzvah of Tefillin is mentioned four times in Chumash, Therefore, there are four parshios, four sections, those four paragraphs that reference the tefillin, which are written on parchment scrolls and encased in the tefillin themselves. In other words, if you were to take a bias, you know, one of the boxes of the tefillin, and open it up, you would find inside, in the case of the tefillin shel Rosh, four separate scrolls, each containing one of these parshios from the Torah. In the case of the tefillin shel Yad, if you were to open it up, you would find the single scroll, which has all four parshios written on one piece of parchment. In truth, although there are four parshios that speak of tefillin, one can subdivide those parshios into two groups. The parshios that are mentioned in Shmos, and the parshios that are mentioned in Sefer Devarim. The basis for dividing up the parshios of Tefillin into two different sections, two and two, is actually based on the very word for Tefillin itself. The Torah uses the word for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, Totafos. Fayula Totafos Beinecha. What does the word Totafos mean exactly? So Rashi brings probably the simplest explanation is that Totafos means a type of jewelry. That that the tefillin is considered to be an adornment for the head. But he then also brings a statement from the Gemara that Totafos is really a composite word. He writes that in one foreign language the word tat means two, and in a different foreign language the word pas means two. So totafos, literally translated according to this interpretation, means two and two. Now that's interesting. Why would the four parashios be subdivided two parashios and two parashios? Well, right off the bat, we recognize that two of them are in Shmos, and two of them are in Devarim. What's also noteworthy is that the two parashios in Shmos both refer to Tefillin as a way of recalling Yetzias Mitzrayim. The parashios in Devarim do not. Based on all of this, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal suggested that the two sets of parashios that we have in the Tefillin represent two different roles that the Tefillin play. The parashios in Devarim speak about an individual's personal connection to God. But beyond the individual's personal connection to God, there's a second way in which we as Jews relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We also relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a nation in a national fashion. And in that context, relating to Hashem as a nation, we also have a notion that we are all related to one another. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim forged the Jewish nation as not merely a collective of individuals, but by going through a common traumatic experience and being saved together, the concept of the Jewish nation was created. Essential to our religious life as Jews is this concept of being part of the Jewish nation. See, we grow up with this idea, and it's so basic to us that it doesn't sound extraordinary, you know, when we state it in a shir. Yeah, of course, part of being Jewish is that you're tied to the Jewish nation. But if you think about it, this is a concept which, to the best of my knowledge, is unique to Judaism and is not present in any other religion in the entire world. We're not just a religion as the Jewish people, we're an ethnicity. We're part of a nation. And we have that concept. That's why Judaism is, in certain ways, so hard to define. It's both a religion and an ethnicity all worked into one another. In a different context, so Rav Soloveitchik said that that's what the tefillin are meant to represent. When a man wears tefillin, the tefillin tie him to God on an individual level, but they also, through Yetzias Mitzrayim, tie him to the Jewish nation in a national, collective kind of sense. We should point out, by the way, since this is a women's shiur, and you know, perhaps tefillin seems to be an odd choice of discussion, I'm fond of quoting the very beautiful insight from the late Rabbi Arya Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, where in his very first work, she produced for NCSY, I think inside of a month, if I'm not mistaken, NCSY asked him to come up with a book about tefillin. So a month later, he came back and handed back the book, which you still see today, the book on tefillin, you know, complete not only with incredibly clear descriptions of what tefillin is all about, but copious footnotes. The man was brilliant, and everything that he did, he was able to put together incredible footnotes, just referencing, you know, different sources from all over the place. So Rabbi Kaplan put that together in a month, and in that book on tefillin, Rabbi Kaplan has a short chapter devoted to girls and tefillin. Not the hot button issue, which has become an issue in the past couple of years. Rabbi Kaplan started off with the assumption that girls are not putting on tefillin, but in addressing himself to NCSYers, he was trying to address the obvious question, okay, you just wrote a book about how important and central tefillin is to the Jewish experience. That works for half of the attendees of NCSY. What about the other half of the attendees of NCSY? You know, what kind of message can you give to them? So Rabbi Kaplan there beautifully writes as follows. We know that the box which contains the parashios, the box of the tefillin itself, is referred to as a bayis. Said Rabbi Kaplan, every Jew has a bayis, which is their vehicle to connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the case of a man, that bayis sits on their forehead and sits on their bicep. In the case of a woman, building that real life bayis is the equivalent of what tefillin is able to do for their male counterparts. Everybody has a bayis. It's just a question of whether your bias is merely representative of what that bias is all about, or whether you're building the actual bias, the real Jewish home, which is, of course, the mainstay of what Jewish continuity is about throughout the ages. The Jewish woman's home is her tefillin, writes Rabbi Kaplan. So, with that in mind, let's take this idea that tefillin has these two elements to it. Essentially, being a Jew means developing a personal relationship to God, but viewing oneself as part of the Jewish nation and the Jewish collective. So, Soloveitchik writes in his seminal work called Dodi Dofeik, this is essentially the message that Rus HaMavia conveyed to her mother-in-law Naomi. When Naomi was trying to dissuade Rus from coming back to Eretz Yisrael and joining the Jewish people, so Rus's final argument to Naomi was, I'm not going anywhere. Amech ami, your people is my people. Ve'lokayach elokoi, and your God is my God. Said Rus Soloveitchik, that's the essence of what it means to be a Jew, and that's the essence of what it means to become a Jew. In other religions, saying Elokayich Elokai would be sufficient. Lahavdil, if anyone wants to convert to Islam, first of all, this is the wrong place, but if anyone wants to convert to Islam, all you got to do is make a statement about Allah and Muhammad as prophet, and boom, you know, you're in, and hopefully you've escaped the sword, you know, in the course of making that declaration. Okay? Judaism goes a step further beyond that. It's not enough to talk about God. It's not even enough to talk about the prophet. Amech ami. Your nation is my nation. As somebody looking to become Jewish, I see myself as part of this greater collective that goes beyond just a religious or spiritual commitment. It means being part of the Jewish nation. As some of you may know, I'm involved in Geirus, so I have a particular affinity for this topic. I remember a number of years back, I dealt with a certain individual who was very gung-ho about all of the spiritual aspects of Judaism. And she was prepared to become a Shomeres Mitzvos in the fullest sense of the word. You know, everything. She was very machmir on all the, the details of all of the mitzvahs. But she hated Jews. She could not get along with any Jewish group. And we tried very hard. We tried putting her together with Shabbos meals at different people's homes. We helped finance her going to Eretz Yisrael to be part of a seminary program. And then going to a non-seminary but frum program that met in Eretz Yisrael. And she just hated everybody. I mean, again, there are a lot of people who hate some people, you know. I mean, in any gathering, there are probably some people that you look at and say, okay, if that person walks my way, I'm going to cross to the other side of the street. But she mamish hated everybody. And she really expressed the idea. She didn't like Jews, but Judaism appealed to her in a very, very real way. Usually we have it the other way around. Usually it's much easier for people to relate to the Amech Ami than to the Elokayach Elokai. I love Friday night meals. I love Shabbos Day Cholent. I love the camaraderie. I love the family. You know, this davening mincha every day, that's a little bit harder, right? But here was the opposite. She loved the ideology of Judaism. She loved the spirituality of Judaism. She was prepared to submit to the notion of Taryag Mitzvahs. She just hated Jews. She really didn't like Jews. And sadly, but she wasn't able to convert. Because in the end of the day, if you don't like Jews, you can't be Jewish. If you don't like other Muslims, I imagine you can go to, some hilltop somewhere and observe your Muslim commitments. And okay, so you don't have to see other people who are, your co-religionists. If you're committed to Christianity, you can find a monastery somewhere, hopefully with an oath of silence, and you can just sit and not talk to anybody. But in Yiddishkeit, it doesn't work like that. In Yiddishkeit, it's Amech Ami ve'lokayich elokoi. The Amech Ami was generated by Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's the exodus from Egypt that made us into not just a group of individuals who share a common religious commitment, but made us into a nation where we care for one another. We hurt when a fellow Jew hurts. We rejoice when a fellow Jew rejoices. That sense of interconnectedness was made by Yitzias Mitzrayim. The truth is, that's really this week's parsha. The very beginning of Vo'era, we have the famous Arba Lashonos Geula, the four different terms which describe what Yitzias Mitzrayim affected. Votzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, vitzalti eschem me'avodosam, v'go'alti eschem bizroa netuya. And the last of the four Lashonos, v'lokachti eschem li la'om. I took you out of Egypt, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I will make you, for me, a nation. Yitzias Mitzrayim creates that component to our religious experience, and the constant emphasis on Yitzias Mitzrayim throughout our religious lives is meant to remind us of exactly that point. We can't be Jews in a vacuum. We have to be concerned about the other. We have to be concerned about his or her spiritual development. We have to be concerned about his or her physical state. We have to be constantly looking around and see what we can do for others. All of that is part of Yitzias Mitzrayim. All of that element of our religious experience is part of the Yitzias Mitzrayim experience. This idea comes through in the very unique concept of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach, of course, exemplifies the whole concept of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's the Korban that marks the fact that we left Mitzrayim. Witness a couple of things that are very unique about this Korban Pesach. First of all, multiple people join together in order to bring a Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is a unique kind of Korban. It's not brought by an individual, but it's not brought by the entire nation. It's brought by groups. Because the whole point of the Korban Pesach is to create a sense of group cohesiveness. If an individual brought it, it would just be his. If it was brought on behalf of the nation, let's say like a Korban Tamid that's brought on a daily basis, that also doesn't create the sense in a palpable way of my interconnectedness with other Jews. But 20 of us get together and bring a Korban Pesach, that creates a sense of group cohesiveness, because that's the very essence of what Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Korban Pesach are meant to represent. I'll share with you a very fascinating insight from Meir Simcha Kohen of Divinz, the Meshech Chochma, where the Meshech Chochma writes that the Korban Pesach may serve an essential role in a convert, in the process of a convert who's looking to convert. You know, historically, the Gemara tells us that when a convert would convert, if they were male, they would have a bris. If they were male or female, they would then go to mikvah. And when the Beis Hamikdash stood, a convert was obligated to bring a korban in order to seal the deal. Obviously, we don't do that nowadays, but when the Beis HaMikdash stood, the korban was the third and final element in the conversion to Judaism. Says the Meshech Chochma, and he has proofs for this Talmudically, it would seem to me, says the Meshech Chochma, that if a convert underwent bris milah and then went to the mikvah, and then instead of bringing their typical korban, brought a korban Pesach, the guy converts a day before Pesach, and he doesn't have a chance to bring his own personal korban, he just comes together with others in bringing a korban Pesach. Says the Meshech Chochma, he believes that that would be sufficient in order to seal the deal and complete the conversion. Why? So based on what we're saying, perhaps the idea behind it is as follows. To the extent to which the Korban Pesach represents the Amech Ami, the notion of becoming part of the collective of the Jewish people, if the convert joins up with others in bringing a Korban Pesach, he's shown that he understands, he gets that aspect of Judaism and is ready to incorporate it into his everyday life. Let's summarize what we spoke about today. We posed at the very outset this question: why is it that mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim is so fundamental to our religious experience? We see that it is. Leave alone the fact that we have a Yontif of Pesach and the Seder and all the mitzvahs that are associated with that. But there's a mitzvah to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim on a daily basis. We mentioned that many poskim hold that that's incumbent upon women, the same way that it's incumbent upon men. There are many other mitzvahs like tefillin, like kiddush, that incorporate mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is Yetzias Mitzrayim so essential? And specifically, we ask the question, when we make kiddush on Rosh Hashanah, we mention that Rosh Hashanah is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. How does that make any sense? Rosh Hashanah and the historical Exodus have no connection to one another whatsoever. Essentially, over the course of today, we've developed two answers to that question. Answer number one, based on the Ramban at the end of Bo, Yetzias Mitzrayim reminds us of God's ability and actual intervention in the world, the notion of God's divine providence, and forces us to acknowledge that that divine providence is not limited to the supernatural, but it's something that's around us all the time. If we just bother to open up our eyes and look closely, we can see God's presence around us constantly in all of the natural aspects of the world that are around us. Approach number two, based on Rav Soloveitchik, Yetzias Mitzrayim reminds us that Judaism is not only a personal religion, but Judaism involves our interconnectedness with our fellow Jews. That it's not just about Elokayich Elokoi. Judaism is not just about acknowledging God, but Amech Ami. It requires us to interconnect with other Jews, to rejoice with them, to mourn with them, to feel part of the Jewish community in all of its richness. And as we go about the day, engaged in various different mitzvos, we're supposed to be constantly reminded, it's not just about me and God, it's about us and God, and how we can connect to one another in terms of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we read these parashios of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Shmos, Vo'era, Bo, Bishalach, let's be reminded of why it is that remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim is so central to our religious experience. And Be'ezus Hashem, we should be zocher to see Hashem both in the events that take place around us, as well as strengthening our connection to our fellow Jews in every wonderful way. I want to wish everyone a good day, a good week, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Do you have any questions? Yeah. Right, so the question is, you know, how do you train yourself to see God's presence in everyday life?
Oh, so
I think, right?
Yourself.
Yeah.
Nothing
in life comes natural. Right? It's just like anything else, you know, if you want to pass a test, you have to study. If you want to improve your physical health, you have to submit yourself to grueling physical training and, you know, have a lot of granola and a lot of spinach. And kuli hai v'ulai, and maybe that will work. So in your spiritual life as well, you know, we have spiritual muscles and we have to exercise them. I think that, you know, in the end of the day, if every time you see something that was, let's say, in English they would call serendipitous, instead of saying, oh, funny that that worked out, what a coincidence, right? If instead of saying that you say, wow, thank you Hashem, and you keep doing that over and over and over again, So then I think you stand a chance. Then you stand a chance to be able to train yourself in that way. Yeah. That he fulfilled. Right, so in other words, maybe a third approach, that Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, you know, is a constant reminder that God is faithful, right? As Rashi really writes in the beginning of Parashas Vo'era, you know, you should tell them, Ani Hashem, what's Ani Hashem? Ne'eman l'shalim schar, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is faithful and reliable to fulfill His promises. I think it's true. I think in many ways that's included in the first approach that we had. In other words, you know, Yitzias Mitzrayim and remembering it helps us with our personal relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the here and now, you know, so it's not just about a historical event, but it's something very real about how I can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, in real time and in real life. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Hashem Hu Elokim, and then, right. Yeah, we know that's true. I mean, many people here probably remember the Six-Day War. I certainly remember I remember the Gulf War in 91. You know, 39 Scud missiles fell on Eretz Yisrael and one guy died of a heart attack. That's miraculous. Yeah, all the Israeli newspapers at the time said, this is miraculous. And what happened? So then everyone went back, you know. It's all perspective. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could be Korea Yam Suf in front of us, but if you have the wrong perspective, you'll explain whatever you explain. The Ramban, again, with this I'll end because I don't want to run into the next presentation. The Ramban writes in Parshas Beshalach, if you look in the Chumash in Parshas Beshalach, it describes how Hashem made the wind blow the whole night prior to Kriyas Yam Suf. So Ramban says, why is that? So he said, look, and this way, if somebody wants to come along and say, you know, gee, right place, right time, it just really worked out very well, which, by the way, there are scientists to this day who explain it that way, So harishus biyadcha, you know, you can do that. You know, God gives us the free choice to be able to reject even the most obvious of miracles. So it's all about training. At the end of the day, you have to train yourself. You know, if you have the wrong perspective, you could have anything happen, and you'll attribute it to other forces. We'll just take one last, and then again, I don't want to cut into the next shiur. Yeah. Right. Agreed. I'll make 15 seconds worth of comments. Comment number one, agreed and true, and requires more elaboration than I can elaborate on in the next 15 seconds. That's comment number one. Comment number two, though, I would say, and I think it's important to reiterate this, the tefillin are flashier and more exciting. The bayis ne'emon b'Yisrael is more everlasting. And is more everlasting. And I say that as somebody who puts on tefillin every day. You know, and not to denigrate the tefillin in any way, but the bayis ne'emon b'Yisrael on the end of the day is what will build Yiddishkeit for the next generations. Thank you very, very much, and wish you have wonderful, wonderful things.